Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. Everybody, I'm Dr. Ray Hynes, joined here with Blythe Ahlberg. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. And you?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. Excited to be podcasting again today.
I know. You moved to Colorado.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Follow me around the globe.
You went from sunny to mountainous cold.
And let me just tell you that we get all four seasons within a week here.
Wow.
It was sunny in 73 the other day, and yesterday we got 14 inches of snow. So
wow. Crazy. Crazy.
It's wonderful, though. We're absolutely loving it here.
Awesome. Well, in today's podcast, here's what we have for the agenda. All right. First thing I wanted to do is I wanted to talk about confidence, and specifically the three questions that we should be asking ourselves to enhance or to be able to access our confidence a little bit better. You know, we get a lot of questions about diet and exercise, but the truth is, if you don't have the confidence to apply those tips and those tricks, you know, if you don't have confidence that you can do it successfully, then it doesn't matter what we tell you, you're not going to implement it.
Right. It's kind of sabotaged from the beginning.
Right. And so we're going to talk about the three questions to ask throughout the day as you're kind of, you know, when you're sitting in front of that piece of cake, for example, and you're trying to get yourself not to eat it. And then we're going to talk about the five ways to boost confidence as well. And, you know, I got these from a productivity and business expert by the name of Peter Voogt. And it applies to the whole weight loss process as well. So I'm excited to kind of bring those five tips. Okay.
Awesome.
And then we're going to do a throwback, right? So we're going to go back to an old podcast and kind of re-enliven or bring back up one of the old tips and tricks that we provide. And I'd like to, you know, continue to do this in the podcast just to kind of remind people of some of the things that you may be, you know, you may see as kind of old news, but it's so important, right?
Yeah. And a lot of times when you and I rehash things like that or revisit things like that, we end up kind of implementing some new ideas. So it's not just old information. We end up bringing new things to the table as well.
Absolutely. And remember, it's easy to learn something new, or it's easier to learn something new than to do something old. And it's in the doing that people get the results. So
that's right.
It's good to go back and kind of re-enliven some of these topics that are still as viable today as they were, you know, even if we talked about them 2 or 3 years ago, right?
Yeah.
All right. So awesome. Let's jump right in. And I want to start with a quote, which I thought was a very interesting and very true quote. And the quote is this. And I love your quotes. I don't know who said this, so I can't give credit where credit is due. But it might have been Peter Voogt, you know, when I was reading through one of his books. But it says, if you don't have confidence, you will always find a way to lose.
That is very true.
It is true, right? You know, when you, you know, the clients that we have the greatest difficulty with are not the clients that have the greatest knowledge. It's the clients who have the greatest or the least amount of self-confidence.
Right.
Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely. And actually, it's funny you say that because I'm working with somebody right now who is probably the brightest person I have ever worked with. And it's the confidence, not the confidence level overall, but the confidence level when it comes to approaching weight loss and just living a healthier lifestyle, because this is a big change for this individual. So the confidence just isn't there. There have been several attempts and I'm going to call them failures, but unsuccesses along the way. And here we are today. And, you know, the confidence level is lower than when this person initially started. So
right.
I totally understand that.
And I think a lot of that will come to light here in this discussion as well. So let's jump right into the three questions, all right? So these are the types of questions that you need to ask yourself if you don't have a lot of confidence. And we all, on some level, lack confidence, at least in certain compartments of our life. So it's okay that this may be true for you. I don't think there's anybody listening who thinks that they can't have more confidence in their life.
Oh, you're right. I'm in agreement with that.
All right. So the first question is this. What will it take to guarantee that I will accomplish my health goals this year? Now, the reason I ask that question is because in the absence of a plan forward, right, if you don't have confidence that you have a strong, solid plan forward, then it's hard to commit yourself to the process, right?
I was going to use the word commit. That's right. It's really hard to commit to something when you don't feel entirely confident about it. Absolutely.
Right. And what this question does is it taps into what we already know. It taps into the fact that we have a ton of wonderful information swirling in our brain. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. have listened to the podcast for years now. And, there's been enough in the podcast delivered so far to help people achieve, significant results. But a lot of people who are listening still haven't done that, right? They haven't achieved it.
Right. And sometimes it's connecting the dots too, that builds the confidence level. So you can listen to the podcasts, but gathering the information and applying it, or the doing part, as you said, is where you're going to find those results.
Right. And when we ask the question, what will it take to guarantee that I will accomplish my health goals this year? Just sit down, write it out, write down what you think, and let go of willpower and self-discipline. Let go mm-hmm. of whether or not you believe yourself capable of doing it. If you had all the willpower and self-discipline in the world, what would it take to guarantee that you'd achieve your weight loss results? Think of it that way.
Okay, that's good. The truth of the matter is everybody's capable. Everybody is capable of becoming more fit and more healthy than you were yesterday.
Absolutely. But I think a lot of people, unfortunately, they get caught in this cycle of trying to haggle with nature. Nature,
yes.
With every single person, there is a formula for achieving weight loss. And it varies from person to person. We like to say that there's one true weight loss formula, and it's different for everybody.
That's
There are certainly components that are similar, or components that may even be identical, but the whole formula itself is different from person to person. So we kind of get caught up in this in trying to haggle with nature. Nature says, this is what you need to achieve. This is what you need to do. You need to do this. You need to exercise in this way. You need to eat mm-hmm. in this way. And then we start saying, okay, wait a minute, nature. Let's, what if I just allowed myself to have an ice cream sundae every night? Mm-hmm. Would that be okay?
So you're trying to haggle. Yes, I
right.
get it.
And haggling in this sense has a tendency to deplete confidence. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But mm-hmm. Once you figure out what it would take, you ask yourself, are you willing to pay that price? And sometimes you won't be willing to pay the price. And at that point, you're just going to have to, figure out what type of, what type of plan you can commit to, and then be satisfied with the results that you get. So, if you're thinking body of your dreams, if you're thinking the body of a fitness model, then, there's a lot that you're going to have to do to achieve that. And you may not be willing to pay that price, and that's okay. But then you have to figure out, well, if not the fitness model body, then what body would I feel very confident in?
Right. And committing to a plan, 70% of the time or 80% of the time may be what you can give to get you there.
Right. So the second question is, what would happen if I acted on what I already know?
And
it kind of goes back to what we talked about just before this, right?
All the information swirling and just being able to connect the dots
right.
and put it together and become a doer. That's exactly right.
Right. And that's where the confidence lies, and we're going to talk about that.
Okay.
So what would happen if I acted consistently on what I already know? You guys know. You guys who are listening right now, you have enough in your brain to make progress.
That's
what if you acted on it?
Confidence building question is what
it
that
is. Is.
That's a fantastic question.
And then the third question is, will this add or subtract to my confidence account? And this concept of the confidence account, I think is very interesting and can be very powerful for people, because the things that we do either add or subtract from that, right?
Right. You know what? That's so funny you say that, because one of my favorite things to say to my clients that just really resonates with them is every time you make a choice about what you're going to do, activity-wise or nutrition-wise, you're either taking a step toward your goal or you're taking a step away from your goal. You get to make that choice. And it's kind of like, that's kind of the same idea, you know, with the account. You put so much in, you can only take so much out. If we can do that with our bank accounts, we can certainly do that with our fitness, nutrition, confidence levels, mm-hmm. all of those things.
Yeah. And it can be small things. And in fact, small things oftentimes can do wonders over time to our confidence. You know, for example, if you go to the coffee shop every morning and you know, you ask for your coffee a certain way, and the barista doesn't provide it in the way that you asked. Do you just accept it and walk out the door with a cup of coffee that's not what you wanted, or do mm-hmm. you ask them to correct it and fix it? And you know, those types of small things can build confidence, and confidence spills over to other areas of your life. Being able to do that helps you to say no to other people who request your time, that time that mm-hmm. could be spent exercising or improving your diet or spending time with your family, friends, or doing something active.
Right.
So it all spills over.
Another example just like that is being able to order the food that you want. When you go out to a restaurant and, you know, there's a salad or something on a menu and you're like, well, that might be great, but geez, if it didn't have all that cheese in it, or if it didn't have all the dressing that I know that they already put in there, you know, being able to order your food and ask for it the way you want it is so empowering. It does take confidence to be able to do, but once you've done it a couple of times, you realize that people are actually out there to help you, and they will help you build your own confidence by, you know, allowing you to order just like you said with the coffee, but it's something off the menu to help you work toward your goal.
It's a great point. I've heard you discuss mm-hmm. this in the past with the clients that you've talked to who just didn't have the confidence to even ask the waiter mm-hmm. For the type of changes in the diet that they wanted to make.
Yeah. And it can be difficult. I'm not going to, you know, lie about that. It can be completely difficult. But once you've practiced it a couple of times, it becomes so much easier. And then all of a sudden, you've got this new confidence.
Right.
And, you know, that you've just built.
And confidence, it should be noted, comes from self-esteem. And mm-hmm. self-esteem comes from doing the things that you know you should do when you know you should do them.
And you feel great about yourself, and then you become this glowing individual.
Right. And, you know, the biggest way to boost your confidence is through sacrifice. And think about this, Blythe. Okay. Going back to the cake situation.
Yes.
The cake's sitting in front of you, and you have the option to either eat it or not. It's a sacrifice not mm-hmm. to eat that cake. And when you make the decision not to eat the cake, and that sacrifice builds confidence.
Right.
When you do not sacrifice, then you will. Then the opposite is true. You eat the cake, and your confidence accounts drops a little bit.
Right, and a lot of times that adds to other feelings about yourself that can lower your self-esteem. You know, a lot of times when you give in and you have the cake, all of a sudden now you have a feeling of guilt. Now you know, oh geez, now I have to go to the gym, and then there's some amount of stress that gets added to that, and you know. Denying yourself the cake in the moment may be difficult, but the rewards you gain after controlling yourself in that moment, in that little pivotal moment, if you can control yourself, you will be boosting your confidence for moments thereafter.
Right. And, you know, I know that, you know, a good friend and colleague of mine, Jade Tita, and, you know, he would, when we'd go to dinner, he would order dessert. And he would mm-hmm. take two or three bites of it, and then he would push it away. And, you know, when we were talking about that, he said this is the way that he has built his own confidence around things that he – and willpower around things that normally he did not have that willpower or confidence to do.
Okay.
And so, you know, just being able to do that, every time you do that, take three bites of a dessert or two bites of a dessert and then push it away, that helps to build confidence and willpower and self-discipline.
Right. Okay.
All right. Oh, so let's go to the five ways to boost self-confidence. Okay.
Yes.
Number one, and some of these will be a little bit repetitive. We've talked about some of these in the previous section, but it's good to repeat it anyway. Number one is ask, will this build or detract from my confidence account? Mm-hmm. We've already talked about that. Every time you do that, you know, when you're facing that cake and you say, will this build or detract by eating this cake? It allows your brain to kind of perceive the situation in a different way. It's no longer just about, you know, feeling good by eating the cake as far mm-hmm. as getting the taste buds involved and the explosion the that happens in your brain.
Right.
It then becomes about something else, about your confidence. And the confidence is a long-term thing. So ask yourself, will this build or detract from my confidence account? Okay. Number two is determined to perceive challenges as opportunities.
How, big one.
Yeah, because when you think about it, when somebody lives their life and something bad happens and they perceive that as something outside their ability to control, mm-hmm. then that is something that detracts from your confidence because you perceive it as not being something that you can do something about. And when you perceive those kinds of negative occurrences as positive things, as challenges, then it shifts something in the brain. Going back right. to the cake situation, let's say you eat the whole cake.
Okay.
You have a slice of cake in front of you and you eat that and then you go on and you eat the whole cake. So if you perceive that as a challenge rather than an opportunity, then what happens is you start dwelling on the negative component of it. You start dwelling on the wrong thing.
That's where the guilt and all the other feelings come in.
Which doesn't serve you.
Right.
But when you look at it as an opportunity, well, how can we look at that as an opportunity? I just ate a whole cake. You look at it as an opportunity by asking yourself, well, why did I eat the whole cake? Did I starve myself all day long? You know, did I am I dealing with some sort of stress that I'm pushing aside that I have to deal with, but I'm refusing to do so and I'm self-medicating with the cake? Mm-hmm. So the opportunity is in figuring out the why behind the what.
Right. And, you know, another one I'm going to throw in there, and this is personal experience. You know, we've talked about me and cake before and, you know, throwing it out in the trash can outside, you know, so it is nowhere near me because I'm the type of person, I'm not as much like Jade. You know, I can't really take three bites and push the dessert away. It's either in front of me, and I'll eat it, or if it's not around, you know, then so what I'm trying to get at is, for me, I would have to throw the cake in the trash bin outside so I know that I can no longer get it. That works for me. But trust me, that before I learned that about myself, there were several opportunities that I came across, you know, where the cake was there and I would eat the whole cake and then say, you know what, geez, I feel horrible. Why did I do that to myself? So also taking the time to note in that moment where you have actually done that and you're starting to feel bad about it, or you feel like you made the wrong decision, or you're starting to kind of wallow in the decision that you made. Another way to turn that around and kind of shift your perspective on that is to recognize not only what put you in that predicament or that position, but how you feel in that moment. And mm-hmm. is it better or worse?
Right. And, you know, I recall a discussion with Deepak Chopra, and I didn't have the discussion with him. I've never spoken to the general, although I would love to. But I heard a talk he was giving. And one of the things he talked about was how, you know, he had it was either a client or a friend who was a smoker and wanted to quit smoking. And he said, mm-hmm. well, you know, he had tried many times before not to, and he had failed in trying to quit smoking. He said, well, just stop trying to quit. All I want you to do is when you smoke, when you light up, is ask your body, how do you feel about this?
Mm-hmm.
And just listen to what the body's telling you. Listen to the sensations that it's sending you. Do you feel kind of a low grade gnawing nausea underneath the surface? Do you, mm-hmm. you know, when you start to listen to the feelings and just be mindful, even if you're eating the cake, asking yourself while you're eating the cake, am I enjoying this? Is this worth it? Is this building my confidence account? Even if you're eating the cake, it helps to shift something in the body.
Yes, absolutely. Mindful is the key word there, I think.
Okay. And then let's go on to number three. And that is when you stay consistent and start seeing results, your confidence grows.
Yes.
Consistency is the missing ingredient of so many people's weight loss programs.
Consistency is key. I always say that. It's absolutely right. And all those little baby steps, if you do take baby steps, all of them add up to one giant leap. So as long as you can stay consistent and taking baby steps forward, it can even be a couple of steps backwards, but you just stay on the path and you will continue to move forward.
Absolutely. And then the fourth one is get out of your comfort zone regularly. Mm. And, you know, when we get out of our comfort zone, it really does help us to build confidence.
You learn a lot of new things about yourself when you're not in your comfort zone.
Right.
Whether it's nutrition, exercise, perspective, you know, on anything.
You know, I used to think of all the Heinisch brothers. You know, I've got two brothers, one who's younger, one that's older. I always felt myself to be not funny and not able to be funny. And so one time I decided I was going to do stand-up comedy, and I'll never forget that experience. I actually did it. I practiced for like 6 months, mind you, before I went up on stage. But I then went up on stage and did stand-up comedy. And, just stepping out of that comfort zone and doing that thing that you think yourself incapable of doing is one of the quickest ways to build confidence in that aspect, right?
Yeah, that'll fast forward you right there.
Yeah, and going to the weight loss, if you've never gone a whole month without eating sugar, for example, trying something like that, 30 days, I'm going to put 30 days on the calendar, I'm not going to eat any sugar during that 30-day period no matter what. Okay. That kind of thing can help build that kind of confidence because you're stepping out of your comfort zone, right?
Right, absolutely.
And number five, this is huge. This is a huge one. And that
is for last.
Never compare yourself to others. Only compare yourself to the person you were yesterday.
Yes.
There is no faster way to destroy your confidence than to compare yourself to somebody else, especially when it comes to weight loss.
You know, the one thing about that is that that's probably one of the most difficult and probably one of the most widespread confidence detractors. You know, you walk into a gym and you look around and you think everybody's looking at you and you're immediately comparing yourself to everybody else. Even, you know, at dinner, you're looking around at other people. So it's important. That's important. I mean, I don't know what else I can say about it, but we all have to stop doing that. And I don't care who you are. It takes a lot to just be your own person and be better than you were yesterday. And if we can really just change our focus, change our perspective, and focus on being better than you were yesterday, every single person can make an advancement.
Right, because you know you're comparing apples to apples. Yes. In the world of weight loss and the world of fitness, you know, we oftentimes compare apples to oranges. And you know, for example, if we're comparing ourselves to our friend who just is naturally skinny, you know, there are a lot of people on this earth who can eat sundaes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and not gain an ounce of fat. And you know, so we start comparing ourselves to them. That is disheartening. That is going to destroy your confidence. And if we look at, you know, fitness models on magazines and start comparing ourselves to that, we, no matter how good our lifestyle, we may never achieve that. It just may not be in our genetic cards. And I know that's not politically correct to say, especially when we're doing a podcast on weight loss, but it just may not be in your genetic cards. It doesn't mean you can't achieve significant results. It doesn't mean you can't achieve, you know, a body that that you can be, you know, that you can feel confident in.
Right.
It just means that you may not have rippling abs, and to be honest with you, most of those people in everyday life, even those fitness models, don't have those types of rippling abs and rippling muscles when they're walking out and about and walking through Starbucks.
Right. Don't forget they're on a magazine cover or wherever it is on a poster, wherever it is that you saw them. So most of them don't walk around looking like that.
No.
It's okay to strive for a goal of something like that.
Sure.
But something that's really important for everybody to know is that you are never going to look like anybody else. You're only going to look like the best version of you. And that is really, truly the best goal to aim for.
Right. And if you don't, if you don't achieve that goal of focusing on just being better than yourself, trust me, you're going to suffer some really major setbacks because your brain won't let you succeed because of the fact that you're comparing yourself to something that is not achievable for you.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. So now it's time for the throwback section of the show.
Whoop,
whoop. All right, going to the throwback. So today's throwback lesson is rediscovering the 30-30 plan.
Ah, the good old 30-30 plan. One of the favorites. One of the most popular, I think, because it's a great goal for anybody at any stage, at any phase, wherever you are in your fitness or nutrition plan or lifestyle, whatever it is.
Right. So the 30-30 plan is you commit to 30 days to 30 minutes of walking every single day for 30 straight days. Rain, shine, 14 inches of snow, doesn't matter. you commit to doing 30 minutes of walking for 30 straight days, mm-hmm. no breaks. And if you take a break, if you miss a day, like even if you get sick or something, you have to start over.
Okay.
You have to start over.
Totally doable.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize just how impactful that can be. And a lot of it is about building that confidence, right? It's about sticking to something, to one thing for 30 days, even if it's something as simple as just walking 30 minutes.
And it's the consistency. You're building your confidence in that area as well.
Right. And walking is one of the most underrated forms of exercise or activity. Partially because, number one, it helps to lower cortisol, which most of us are walking around in this life with too much cortisol, too much mm-hmm. stress hormone
stress.
In our system. And walking, especially out in nature, helps to lower that by up to 18%.
Awesome.
In addition, it burns calories underneath the radar of the body. You know, when we jog, there's something called a compensatory mechanism. If we jog for an hour or run for an hour, there's a compensatory mechanism that happens, which causes us to seek out food and to sit or be more sedentary in order for our body to recover those calories. And women are especially susceptible to compensatory mechanisms than men. So when we're walking, because walking is a beneath the surface kind of form of activity, it's more activity than it is exercise. Mm-hmm. It doesn't send negative signals to the body that cause those types of compensatory mechanisms. And a part of that just has to do with the fact that you're not losing calories at a really aggressive rate. So the body never senses those calories are being burned. So it's just an underrated form of exercise. And even if you're extremely fit, it's good to add walking into your program, just leisurely walking. You don't have to put on the speed walking shorts and, you know, go pumping those arms. I'm talking about just walking out in nature and, you know, just being active in that way.
You know, there's so much that goes on when you're walking too. Your body's releasing endorphins. You start thinking about things. You can really get yourself organized. I know for me, walking, you know, whether it's on a treadmill or outside, it really just helps me kind of organize my day. I mean, it's got so much more benefit than just activity.
Yes. Yes. In the brain as well. You know, they say mm-hmm. if you walk long enough, you can solve all the world's problems.
And there you go.
And most of us need that type of time away. All right, so that's the throwback. Let's go to the research update for the show, okay?
Okay, let's do it.
And it's all connected. It's all connected. So researchers have discovered a new mechanism by which stress can poison your weight loss efforts. In animal models, stress stimulates the production of a protein that's called beta-tropin, which seems to inhibit fat metabolism by interfering with a vital enzyme called adipose triglyceride lipase. The body's ability to liberate stored fat to be burned for energy is inhibited. It was determined that both metabolic and environmental stress in mouse models led to a dramatic rise in beta-tropin and marked decrease in fat metabolism. Now, remember, one of the core guiding principles of Cut the Fat podcast is there are non-caloric causes to weight gain.
Right.
So it's not all about calories, and stress is one such example. And so the key here is in the animal models, and we have to see if this holds true in humans, but in all likelihood, my guess is it does. But by increasing the beta-tropin, what it does is it prevents your fat cells from being able to liberate fat, send it into the blood. Only once that fat hits the blood can it be burned. So a lot of people have the misconception that fat burning happens in the fat cell. It doesn't. Fat release and storage happens in the fat cell. But once it enters the blood, it's got to be shifted to the liver and the muscles in order to be burned for energy. So when we think of it that way, if our cells are locked down and we can't release the fat into the blood, then we can't burn that fat. So we can't burn the fat calories. So what the body has a tendency to do is start to burn more sugar. And when we burn sugar, it causes sugar to go, you know, blood sugars to go up and down. That then, you know, the quick drop in blood sugar can trigger mm-hmm. food-seeking behavior mm-hmm. And many other things. There are many other causes or issues with cortisol and other factors caused by stress that interfere with fat loss.
Oh, okay. Cool.
All right. So that was an interesting study. And like I say, it's not in humans, it's in animals. But my guess is it holds true in humans as well. So there are other impacts of stress as well. And, you know, we mentioned cortisol production. And a lot of people don't realize, but short-term cortisol increases as you know, happens in things like high intensity interval training or short bouts of stress, that actually triggers more fat loss. In fact, it triggers the body's release of both fat and sugar, and the sugar is prioritized. So the reason that happens is because when we're under stress, let's say we're being attacked by a lion out in the jungle, the cortisol causes a quick jolt in sugar availability to the muscle so that we can use that and burn that to run away. Because as people realize, as people know, sugar is the primary source of energy during intense bouts of activity, like high intensity interval training or running away from a lion.
Right, that fight or flight.
Right. And but what happens when we're exposed to long-term stress is that then locks down the fat cells. Elevated cortisol levels for extended period of time locks down the fat cells because the body doesn't think you're being attacked by a lion. It thinks you're going through famine, which is one of the key stressors to humans as we evolved. So the goal there then is the body then shifts its attention and starts locking down the fat cells. And this is probably one mechanism in which it happens.
Right. And goes into like a fat storage mode, which is where people have a lot of difficulty when they're in an extremely stressful situation and they decide that they're going to start really paying attention to their eating and maybe running more or whatever it is. So they intensify the stressors by adding more building blocks to it.
Right.
So doing something like walking, especially in times of high stress, would be something that I would certainly advise somebody to do.
Right. And it's one reason why a lot of people respond better to high intensity interval training rather than long cardio bouts, because that extended cardio adds an extra stressor to the system. And when that happens, that then, you know, as you mentioned, that just worsens your circumstances. Mm-hmm. And another reason that this is a problem is because there's a cortisol recirculation issue that occurs as well. So when cortisol enters the blood, which is, again, the stress hormone, it gets converted into cortisone, which is inactive. But there is a enzyme within fat cells that then, once that cortisone enters the fat, it converts it back into cortisol within the fat cell. So your blood levels of cortisol may be normal or only mildly elevated or even low, but your fat cells may have extremely high levels of cortisol in there that is then, again, negatively impacting the ability to release the fat.
Right, working against what it is that you're trying to work toward.
Right. We also know that stress destroys intestinal bacteria. And so extended stress can cause a negative impact on the intestinal bacteria. And recent research suggests that when those bacteria are out of balance, weight gain ensues. So adding more of those good bacteria back into the gut is a good idea, especially in people who are exposed to long-term stress.
Good tip.
And then finally, and this is the last one that I have on my list here, when we're under extended periods of stress, it actually causes the thyroid hormone to shift in a negative way. So there's an inactive form or a less active form of thyroid hormone called T4. That's what your thyroid produces and kicks out into the blood. Once it enters the blood, and this is a bit of oversimplification, but it kind of gets the point across. Once the T4 enters the blood, it gets converted into T3, which is the active form of thyroid hormone. That's the thing that seems to drive metabolism. So when we're under extended periods of stress, the body starts converting that T3 into what's called reverse T3. And reverse T3 has a negative effect on the metabolism. Why? Because the T3 is like having one foot on the gas, and the reverse T3 is like having one foot on the brake. So the metabolism just can't function because you've got too much of that reverse T3 floating through the system, and stress ups that level. So even if somebody is on thyroid medication, for example, and they're not seeing results, oftentimes it's because they're producing too much reverse T3. And that can be caused by extended periods of stress. But guess what's one of the most common stressors that triggers more reverse T3 within the body?
What is it?
Dieting, starving yourself.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Because when you're under a lot of stress, you know, let's say you're sick, for example, you get injured or you get stressed or you get sick. The body's saying, well, let's conserve this energy just in case you can't find food, just in case you can't get out there. So to gather food or hunt down food. So the reverse T3 is just a mechanism to slow down your metabolism in such a way that allows you to get better initially so that eventually you can go and seek out food again. And when in famine, during times of stress and caused by famine or starvation or dieting, the reverse T3 is just a way to make the fat last longer, right?
Right. You know what's unfortunate is I see this all the time. And usually it's women that are right around my age who are experiencing thyroid issues. They've been through some serious times of stress or are in the middle of an extremely stressful situation, you know, with work or whatever it may be. They don't get enough rest. They want to exercise, whether it makes, you know, because it makes them feel better, you know, gives you energy in the moment. Exercising certainly makes you feel better. But if you're doing it to the point where you're working against what your body is trying to achieve, it's just going to put you into a difficult circle to come out of. And, you know, you mentioning that reverse T3, you know, I think I see a lot of that.
I'm sure you do. And a lot of doctors don't even test for a reverse T3. So
yeah,
it's one thing to keep in mind that if you are dealing with a thyroid issue or you're on T4, which is levothyroxine, a common medication used to treat thyroid, you know, and you're not losing weight and you're still suffering the symptoms associated with thyroid hormone, even though your TSH, which is the test that they usually assess, is normal, ask your doctor to test free T3, free T4, and reverse T3, and see where those are. And again, you know, a lot of the issues that we see with people who are trying to lose weight is they're not consuming sufficient calories. It's why when you tell people eat more calories, it's one of the reasons why things start to improve for them, because that reverse T3 begins to, you know, the production of that begins to decrease, and your natural metabolism kicks up.
And that's what we want. It's your natural metabolism kicking up. That's exactly the goal you want to aim for.
So quickly.
Ah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Here are five ways or five tips to improve your metabolism if it's caused by stress-induced, you know, inhibition, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Number one is remove the stressor if possible. I mean, that sounds like common sense, but a lot of people don't think about it. They oftentimes get caught up in thinking that doesn't serve them, right? It's they define their problem in terms that are unsolvable. And so it is rare that we find a circumstance in life that you cannot do something about, at least on some level.
So, and this kind of circles back to the whole confidence thing, because changing your perspective on that particular stressor may be all you need to do.
Right. That's true.
You know, like worrying about something really doesn't solve a problem. Going for a walk and maybe thinking about how to solve that problem is where you need to be at.
Right. You can either change your circumstances or you can change your blueprint, which is how you perceive the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And the perception is really, I mean, keep in mind, stress happens in the brain, right? It's happening in the brain. It's not, whether you want to admit it or not, it's not being caused by something outside yourself. It's your brain's perception of what's going on. And the perception is you're in harm's way. Right. So change the stressor if possible. If you can't change your perception of the stressor,
you are in control.
Yes, you are. Number two, don't add any additional stress if possible. Mm. If you're stressed out of your mind, don't jog for 2 hours on a treadmill. Right. That just adds more stress to your system. And we like to, you know, even in people who are under a lot of chronic stress, I try to tell them no aerobic exercise. Mm-hmm. Walking, which is not, you know, to me is activity, not exercise, and resistance training, and maybe some short bouts of high intensity interval training, because the high intensity interval training is a short jolt of stress to the system, and then relaxation for extended periods of time.
Right.
And that has the opposite effect. It will cause an increase in cortisol initially, but it then trains the body to relax. That cortisol will drop quickly, the adrenaline will drop quickly, and that's healthy for the body. Short bouts of stress is healthy for the body because it helps us develop more resistance to stress. But long, uncontrolled stress, that's a problem.
And if you're somebody who's used to doing long bouts of stressful activity, you'll probably see results by just changing that up.
Right. Number three is learn to observe without judgment. And what we mean by that is step outside yourself and perceive your life circumstances like an outsider, like you're outside looking through a window at what's going on in your life. Look at it objectively. Just perceive it without the need to judge or to change the circumstances. Now, how do you practice that? Well, that's where this concept of mindfulness meditation comes in. And mindfulness meditation is really all about that. It's about when you're meditating, for example, you just close your eyes and you focus on your breathing. What happens is your brain starts pumping out all kinds of stuff that it needs to deal with, or even random thoughts, strange random thoughts that pop up in your brain. And your job when you're doing mindful meditation is just to acknowledge it, notice it, and let it just go by like pictures on a screen. You don't have to say, oh my God, you know, like if you forgot to do something, you don't react to that. And that's why mindfulness meditation is so powerful, because it teaches you not to instantly react to things.
Right.
It allows you to live in a life that is surrounded by stressors and not have to react to every single thing that comes your way.
Awesome. Love, love, love.
And there
love
are that. Some really, really great apps on the smartphones that guide you through the process of learning mindfulness meditation. So you check them out. A lot of them are very inexpensive, a couple dollars. And they walk you through 10, 15 days of learning mindfulness meditation, and then they allow you to just continue it on your own schedule. So it's pretty cool. Technology today has just opened up doors that just weren't there. And learning mindfulness meditation, even with just 5 or 10 minutes a day, is a very, very easy way to do that.
Amazing. And if you're somebody who is already practicing doing that, getting an app and like learning another way to do it, or another avenue, or, you know, another tactic to doing that, would be great. I know that, you know, I make an effort to do that, but listening to an app and guiding me through sounds like a great idea.
Absolutely. And I've got a few on my own phone, but there's one that I'm using. I can't remember the name of it, so I will have to I'll have to get back to you on that and maybe at a future episode. Number four is decrease your cortisol. So we talked about trying to we've said remove the stressor if possible. Mm-hmm. Don't add additional stress when possible. Learn to observe without judgment, and then decrease cortisol. Well, how do we do that? Well, meditation is certainly one way to lower cortisol. That's been clearly demonstrated in the research literature. Number two is drinking water. I came across some research where they evaluated how much cortisol and cortisone people were excreting through the urine when they started to drink more water, and it was significant. So one very easy and quick way, and this, Blythe, is why I think drinking extra water throughout the day is so helpful in helping people lose weight, is because it's helping them get rid of some of the excess cortisol and cortisone.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
And so that's a simple way to do it. Just increase your water intake, and we've talked about that in the past. Mm-hmm. There's something called a power pose. Have you ever heard of the power pose?
I have not.
So a researcher, you know, discovered that when they trained people to, in the morning, stand in front of the mirror and take up as much space as they can, just stare at themselves in the mirror, shoulders up, head up, arms out, legs, strong and wide on the floor. So you're just standing there almost like a big X, and you're just holding that position. They found that cortisol levels dropped in these people. Testosterone levels increased. And I think they evaluated some other hormones as well. Those are the only two that I remember. It's just you do it for a couple minutes in the morning. You just stand in a powerful pose, in shoulders back, head up, tall posture, arms out, legs, strongly positioned on the floor, and you just stand there for a couple of minutes. That's all it takes. It helps to lower the cortisol, increase the anabolic hormones within your body as well.
Wow. Simple suggestion.
Oh, yeah. And then walk leisurely. We already talked about that, so I'm not going to spend any time on that.
30-30.
And then finally, the last plan, the last addition is cultivate a plan. Anxiety is caused by your body receiving the message that something is over the horizon and you have no plan for dealing with that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when you're thinking of, you don't have to solve the problem in order to enjoy the benefits of less anxiety. All you've got to do is convince the brain that you have a plan moving forward. So some examples, let's say you're in the midst of a divorce, and you're anxious about it. The message is being sent to you because there are a lot of unknowns. What's going to happen with the kids? What's going to happen with the house? How are you going to, make ends meet? All these things kind of come into the brain.
These what ifs.
Right. And if we had to wait for the divorce to go through in order to enjoy the benefits of less cortisol, less stress, that's a problem, because these things can drag on for years.
Yes. Yeah.
And so all your brain needs is a plan that it feels satisfied will protect you, will keep you safe during this uneasy time. If you have that plan written out and your brain is satisfied that you're acting on that plan, you will enjoy. You're not going to be totally stress-free, but you'll have a whole lot less anxiety. It hopefully won't reach that level. Yeah.
Right. And sometimes writing it down helps too. You know, just remembering that you do have a plan, because I know, you know, a lot of times we can devise a plan that will satisfy us momentarily. And then you move forward to the next day and maybe there's a new set of problems or, you know, a new issue arises. And if you can kind of revert back to the plan that you've already written down, oh yeah, yeah, that's right, I was going to do this. You know, sometimes that helps people too.
It very much does. And you have to write it down. If it's not written down, believe it or not, it becomes more of a stressor, because now you're trying to
remember it.
Exactly. Exactly. And your brain is worried you're going to forget a very important component of that. Right. So of that plan. So always write it down and then keep it. You know, write it down in a journal. Start journaling. You know, just write about how you're implementing the plan, you know, and then hopefully that'll help you guys out. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, just in divorce. It's in many other things of life. You know, if you've got a job you hate.
Yeah.
Fabricate a plan to get a better job.
Right.
You don't have to actually be in a better job. You just have to have a plan to get a better job.
That's right.
So those are the five points, the five solutions for improving your circumstances when stress is causing problems with your weight gain.
I think there is a ton of information in there for all of us to apply to our lives starting right now. I mean, you know, doing the 30-30 is a great place to start. And selecting a couple of the options for lowering your stress levels or anxiety levels, awesome way to go. And in turn, that will help boost your confidence. This is a great podcast.
Very concentrated podcast. A lot of information in here.
A lot of information.
So as the final piece of today's podcast, I mentioned in the email that I had sent out that we have on our website, Cut the Fat Podcast, this little section in the lower right-hand corner where you can click on the button and you can leave us a voicemail or even a video voicemail if you so want. Now, you can use that for many different reasons. I prefer if you didn't call us or leave us voicemail or a voice hate mail, but if you want to leave testimonials about information that you've applied in your life and you've seen results with, if you have questions, that's, you know, the key thing. I want people to ask questions on that, using that system, so that we can, bring them on the podcast episode, and you can actually be a part of our podcast, experience, right?
Yeah, love it. It's such a great idea. And we've had some, right?
Yeah. And today's, we're going to play one. This is from a young lady by the name of Elaine, and I'm going to go ahead and play it now, and then we'll discuss.
Awesome.
Hello, my name is Elaine. I've been listening to Cut the Fat podcast for years. I've heard every episode, and I've also listened to Fit Life with Blythe. I've heard all the episodes, and I love it. I have a question about weight loss and breastfeeding. I had a cesarean 8 weeks ago, and they gave birth to my little girl. I've been breastfeeding exclusively. I want to lose another about 25 pounds to get back to my pre-pregnancy weight. I'm concerned if I start exercising, it's going to affect my milk supply. And I'm also concerned if I diet, it'll reduce my breast supply, or my breast milk supply. Can you help me in this area? And also, what type of exercises can I do to help my body heal from the C-section? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Elaine. That's a wonderful question. And believe it or not, we get it very often in the office. So let me just kind of go through each part, Blythe, and then we'll comment. Okay.
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. So first off, let's talk about the question about healing after a C-section.
Okay. Well, my suggestion would be there's nothing that you can do to really develop that area, like muscularly. There's no exercise that you can do to heal that area. What you probably really want to focus on is getting in enough healthy fats for sure. You know, I always tell people they should be taking a good fish oil that will help your skin heal and repair. And of course, not straining that area. So you don't want to start doing, you know, 1,000 crunches or something silly a day that's going to add additional stress to that area while it's still healing.
Right. I also like to, you know, I like to follow a protocol that I often use in people who are going through surgery, and that is increase the protein intake. Using something like whey protein is fantastic. That delivers the building blocks that you need to repair. Mm-hmm. Vitamin C. Normally, I recommend 1,000 milligrams twice a day, but in pregnancy, 500 milligrams twice a day is probably fine. And zinc, normally I do 20 to 40 milligrams in pregnancy or in breastfeeding. I would say 10 to 15 milligrams is probably fine as well. And so those components help with the production of collagen that will help with the repair process. It's more about what we take in more than it is about the type of exercise that we do to help an area like that heal.
Right.
All right. The second issue or the second question is, you know, she has 25 pounds to lose to get to her pre-pregnancy weight. You know, so how do we, you know, what is it that we need to do to lose weight when we don't want to impact the breast milk?
Well, this is kind of a challenge because there's a really fine line. And first of all, congratulations on the birth of your baby. And, don't focus so much. My suggestion would be not to focus so much on losing that 25 pounds just yet, because it will happen. As long as you're breastfeeding and you're eating enough calories and keeping your body healthy by exercising and eating proper nutrition, the weight should slowly fall off. Okay, as long as you are taking the right steps. What I would ask you not to do is start restricting your caloric intake. Make sure that, you know, if you want to log your food, maybe write down your food or plug it into an app to make sure you're getting enough calories. And like Ray said, protein. And another one I want to stress is getting in enough healthy fats, because that's that's something that can deplete your breast milk. And you want to make sure that you're not cutting down on the natural healthy fats that you're normally having in your diet, because that will make your breast milk suffer. And you want to make sure that that breast milk contains enough calories for the baby. Number one, so you're not breastfeeding every hour, because if you diet and deplete your calories, that baby's going to be hungry and you're going to put a stress on your body by asking it to produce more breast milk, but that breast milk isn't as calorie dense because you're not eating enough calories. So it's a really fine line. Make sure you're eating just enough, and it might take a little bit of experimenting, but keep the protein and the fats up. Okay. Some healthy carbohydrates as well in there. You know, eating things like quinoa, rice, oats. I don't know if you can have gluten or not, but incorporating those things into your diet as well, so you're not feeling lethargic. You know, it takes a lot for your body to be able to produce breast milk. It takes a lot of energy for you. And, you know, if you're breastfeeding and you're cutting your calories and you're giving the baby less nutrient dense breast milk, it's going to create more stress on your body, like I said, by having to produce more milk, but it's like a watered down version.
Right. And I have a lot of the same points. Don't try to cut calories. Don't do a lot of cardio, because the breastfeeding is what will manage the calories for you, because the average woman will burn between 300 and 600 calories a day, with the average being about 500 calories a day just from breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Focus on getting fruits and vegetables, because a lot of the vitamins and minerals that the baby needs will come from there, and the baby gets first dibs. Consuming enough fat, as you mentioned, salmon, coconut oil. If you ever notice that your milk supply is cutting back or decreasing, or you notice that it's thinning out, then add coconut oil. It is one of the fastest ways to up that milk production as well. A lot of women who struggle with weight while they're breastfeeding, because some women don't lose weight or lose weight very quick, don't lose weight very quickly when they're breastfeeding. One of the primary reasons I believe that's the case is because of the lack of sleep that they're getting from the child waking up and having to breastfeed the child every hour or two, you know, from that aspect of it. And unfortunately, in the first, you know, early stages, the guy isn't a whole lot of help, you know, with dealing with the baby. because of that fact that right. the baby is looking to be fed. So it's the sleep deprivation, I think, that causes a lot of the issues. So one of the things that we know that even with just 24 to 36 hours of sleep deprivation, insulin sensitivity goes down. So that will cause more of an issue for the weight gain and for the inability to burn that fat. So mm-hmm. try to get some extra sleep whenever you can. You know, try to get the guy, you know, to handle things a little bit more.
Even if you're pumping, and maybe he could wake up one time in the night and give the baby, you know, if that mm-hmm. is something that you're open to trying.
Yeah, yeah. And then, leisure walking and short mm-hmm. bouts of resistance training. A lot of the issues that we see, because the breast milk does draw out a lot of calories from the body, oftentimes we see women lose a lot of muscle mass throughout their breastfeeding stage. And so adding more protein helps prevent that. But also doing a little bit of resistance training when you're healed up enough that you can do that mm-hmm. is pretty much the only exercise that you should be doing. Maybe 20 minutes of resistance training exercise a few times a week, just to help maintain that muscle mass. Make sure you get the plenty of protein, and just do leisure walking with your child when possible.
Yeah, there you go. You could add some walking lunges behind the stroller if you wanted. That would be counted as resistance training.
That's definitely a Bly thing right there. I could definitely picture you doing lunges.
broad jumps. You've seen it all.
Oh, I'm sure. So, all right. So let's go ahead and give people the shameless self-promotion. Number one, if you do like kind of motivational quotes, I did start up a Cut the Fat podcast Instagram. It's at Cut the Fat Podcast. On the Instagram, it's pretty much all just quotes that I come across in my reading and, that I hear. And I just, when I come across them, I just load them up and post them on that. And it's really a good way just to kind of get a little jolt of motivation from time to time. So, go ahead and follow us on there if possible. Also, we do the same thing with Twitter. So you could do one or the other, whichever one you prefer.
Or both, if you like a little extra motivation, motivational Facebook. Quotes in your day.
Yep, we have Facebook, and it's now just search for Cut the Fat Podcast, and sign up there as well. Of course, cutthefatpodcast.com. Blythe, you have a website and another podcast.
I do, and I have an app. It's called Fit Life with Blythe, and I have not yet posted up anything this month as far as podcasts go, but I do a lot more of topic specific, like answering a question might be a podcast for me. And I actually ask people to send me questions that they would like to have answered if it's something specific, sort of like what Elaine had, but I generate one complete podcast out of that question. So they're much shorter, kind of to the point. Practical. Don't really have to have a lot of banter, but the information is out there. Fitlifewithblythe.com is my website. And I would love for you guys just to like the page. I try to put some motivational quotes. I do workout and weight loss challenges and all sorts of stuff. Just fun community stuff that people seem to get a lot of good feeling, good vibe out of.
Awesome. And if you're new to the podcast, don't forget to rate us on iTunes as well, because that helps us out as well. So we love to read those, and we read every single one. So, and thank you guys. I just checked on there recently, had some really great feedback from folks, and I just love to read those things. They're my motivator.
Yes, me too. Absolutely. They bring tears to my eyes sometimes. Happy tears.
happy tears. So in the next podcast episode, during the research component of the show, we're going to talk about finding out how much damage you do to your metabolism when you take a break from your diet, and the results are going to blow you away.
Woo, I can't wait.
All right, so that's what we'll talk about in the next podcast, is in addition to many other things. And if you guys leave a voicemail on cutthefatpodcast.com in the lower right-hand corner, you too may be on our next podcast as well.
And your part question. Of our podcast. I love it.
All right. You guys, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye, everybody.